A sign above the doors of an evangelical megachurch in Florida reads, "We are heavily armed. Any attempt will be dealt with deadly force. Yes, we are a church and we will protect our people." It's bizarre, but it's not unusual. In the white evangelical world of America, God and guns are inseparable. They argue that Christ himself issues the call to arms. There's Matthew 10:34. "Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." Distinguished journalist and former evangelical leader William J. Cole interrogates this Christian passion for weapons in his new book, In Guns We Trust: The Unholy Trinity of White Evangelicals, Politics and Firearms. And Bill joins me now from Rhode Island. Bill, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, David. It's a pleasure.
Now, surely that's Christ giving the go-ahead. What's the argument here?
Well, to my former faith tribe, the White Evangelical Church, Second Amendment to our Constitution, that clause which allows us to keep and bear arms, is breathed by God. They actually see that that passage as a bit of scripture in the Constitution, and with that they're off to do as they wish, feeling fully confirmed and blessed by God in their fervor for firearms.
But what are they arming against?
Well, you know, it really, fundamentally, they say that they need to be ready to deal with tyranny should the government turn against the people. This is problematic. I mean, no matter how many guns you've got, even if you've got AR-15 military-style assault rifles in your home, the U.S. government has F-16s and drones and tanks and nuclear warheads and submarines. I mean, how are you going to subdue a tyrannical government if it ever came to that? So it really breaks down. What you're left with is a gun culture that affects hundreds of thousands of Americans in tragic ways every year. That's the result of this very bad religion.
So it's not just the National Rifle Association that is arguing for arming the population. It's Christians.
The Americans who own the most guns, David, are not military veterans or hunters or even police officers. They are white evangelical Christians. This is borne out by some very good studies that show that somewhere between 55 and 65% of white evangelical Christians, and we've got 60 million of these people, have weapons, and many of them have multiple weapons. In interviewing for the book, I encountered people who had small arsenals in their homes. Now, this is really a problem because, you know, it's at 60 million strong, that's a huge population. I mean, that's what, more than double the population of Australia, carrying guns, having guns in the home, even bringing guns to church on Sunday.
That's when you first encountered the armed Christian, isn't it? During religious services.
Yes. I kind of fell into evangelical Christianity quite by accident in my last year at university. I found them to be quite joyous, and there was a camaraderie. I found it very appealing. But fast forward through time, and I realized that all was not as it seemed, that evangelicals seemed determined to be on the wrong side of history on a number of issues, a contempt for the poor and indifference to the environment, hostility to migrants and LGBTQ people. And the last straw for me was guns. I was a worship leader for a mega church in my native Massachusetts when my bass player showed up for practice with a 9mm semi-automatic weapon. And it really blew me away. I didn't know what to make of it. What I soon realized is actually he wasn't alone. Many people were armed and bringing their weapons to services on Sunday. And this is what set me on an investigation to figure out, how did this happen, particularly in a faith tradition that's rooted in nonviolence?
And what do you think is the cause of it all?
Well, there was a hard turn to the right politically and ideologically in the late 60s and early 70s in the United States when white evangelical Christians actually realized that they have political power and clout. And what was happening in our society at that time was desegregation. We were opening our society fully to people of color. And white evangelicals were finding their political voice just as we were going through all of those upheavals. And they didn't like it. They didn't want to see society desegregated. They were quite happy to be in their little white communities with white-only churches and white-only schools and so forth. So there's a lot of white supremacy and racism that is sort of interwoven here. But it was during this time that they found they had a voice, and they latched on to certain social issues. One of them was guns, and it became a religious freedom issue.
I think we underestimate, don't we, the huge transformation of United States politics with the end of Jim Crow.
Yes, we do. And, you know, it's really horrific when I look back at my own personal experience with white evangelical Christianity, realizing how little Christianity is actually left in the movement. You know, I mean, we see today that white evangelicals form the backbone of the MAGA movement in the United States, and they are Donald Trump's most faithful supporters. And, you know, they are hostile toward people of color. I mean, that's just how it is. I it's a very harsh thing to say, but it's borne out by a lot of what's happening in the country today. And, yeah, you know, guns, this gun culture is occurring and intensifying at a time when Christian nationalism is on the rise and has entered the mainstream of our society. And that is very disturbing.
Well, we stumbled across a corner of this story the other day when I was talking to, if that's the word, I'm not sure if that is the word, to Mike Weinstein, who is in the business of protecting people in the armed forces from Christian nationalist commanders who are telling them to fight to bring on the Armageddon.
It's really astonishing. And, you know, in my social media feeds, because I still follow and am followed by a number of evangelicals, I'm seeing people dancing in jubilation and celebrating our involvement as a country in Iran, feeling as though that's going to hasten the return of Jesus Christ. It's incredible, David. It really is incredible. And again, I don't see the tenets and the essence of the historical Jesus reflected in any of this behavior. It seems as though all people are interested in is having influence and clout and a voice in the public square.
And as a journalist, you were on hand after the massacre of Sandy Hook.
Yes, our teams, I was New England bureau chief for AP when Sandy Hook occurred in 2012. This was the slaughter of 20 primary school students and six of their teachers and teachers' aides. And, you know, we all thought that would be a transcendent moment when everything would change, that such a bloodbath would surely bring us to our senses and we would finally enact some modicum of common sense gun control. And it didn't happen. And this is honestly where, you know, those of us who are clamoring for change and to change the narrative around guns in the United States look to you in Australia as an example of how it can actually work. You took decisive action. You know, you will be marking 30 years since the Port Arthur slaughter next month, at the end of next month. And look at what you've done. And even after Bondi Beach in December, again, you doubled down quickly and swiftly. We seem incapable of doing that.
I'm talking to Bill Cole, journalist and author of In Guns We Trust, The Unholy Trinity of White Evangelicals, Politics and Firearms. Bill, the book also charts the fact that Christians are making guns. They're not just bearing arms, they're making arms.
Yes, and that is of particular concern to me. Christians, evangelical Christians, are running a number of the leading gun manufacturing companies. A very notable example is Daniel Defense, which is a gun company based in the southern state of Georgia. And Daniel Defense was founded by an evangelical entrepreneur, Marty Daniel. It made the guns that were used in the slaughter of school children in Uvalde, Texas, a few years ago. It was a very, very horrific mass shooting at a school. They also made some of the guns that were used in what is still the worst mass shooting in U.S. history in 2017, when a bloke took up a perch in a high-rise hotel and fired down at people who were attending a music festival in Las Vegas. And 60 people were killed and hundreds were wounded. And they are making these weapons, David, and saying that they're doing so for the glory of God, if you can believe that. It's just the cognitive dissonance is astonishing.
You record that some of these weapons, these Christian-made weapons, have biblical references on them as well. Like you instanced John 3:16. Well, my memory is slightly hazy, so I had to look it up. So this is a gun urging the customer to think about John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Now, where is the comfort there for an arms manufacturer?
It beggars belief, honestly. I can't follow the logic at all there. There are a number of gun manufacturers who are doing this, stamping some of the scripture references into the steel of the rifles. There's a company in Florida that puts a Bible verse on it, the barrel of its AR-15 military style assault rifles, and it says that this means, you know, having the Bible verse there, it means that Islamic terrorists won't be able to use their rifles, which is ridiculous. It's not really. I mean, it's like smearing bacon fat over a gun to keep to repel Muslims the way you would keep vampires at bay with garlic or holy water or something. It's a very strange phenomenon. It's also illegal because some of these weapons are provided to the U.S. military, which forbids any kind of proselytization or religious imagery in its equipment. So there have been lawsuits. It's just a very, very disturbing visual to see a Bible verse on a weapon of war.
And you have in the book so many instances of evangelical preachers who go well beyond saying, arm yourself, you know, in case the evil forces should attack. They're actually encouraging the use of arms. There's a guy you've tracked down called Matthew Trewella of the Mercy Seat Christian Church in Milwaukee, who has published a book in which he encourages men, and I quote, to redden their swords.
Yes. Again, you know, it doesn't leave much to the imagination. And this kind of language is so dangerous, particularly in our political polarization right now. People were asked, evangelicals were polled to see what they saw as the greatest threats to democracy. And the pollsters found strong support for political violence among those who insist that the United States is a Christian nation and was founded as such. And 3 in 10 white evangelicals agreed with the statement, quote, Because things have gotten so far off track, true American patriots may have to resort to violence in order to save our country. So you see that, you know, not only are white evangelicals arming themselves at astonishing levels, they're actually telling pollsters publicly that they're ready to use those weapons if they feel like they need to do that in order to preserve what they see as their way of life.
But within the evangelical movement in the United States, there must be some pushback.
There's very little pushback, honestly, David, within the evangelical community. There is a circling of the wagons around many social issues and guns in the mix. There are progressive Christians who are doing a lot to change the narrative around God and guns. And some of it is beautiful, actually. There are Christians who are organizing gun buyback events on the streets where people can, no questions asked, turn in their firearms. And in exchange, they get a gift card worth a few hundred dollars or some grocery credits or something like that. And then there are fellows on site with portable forges that are heated up to, you know, I don't know, like hundreds and hundreds of degrees Celsius, and right on the spot they are beating those barrels of rifles into garden tools, almost literally
plowshares. Beating,
yes, swords into plowshares. It's a beautiful gesture. Of course, look, there are tens of thousands of new guns that hit the market every week in the United States. And so as beautiful as these gestures are, they're only taking some hundreds of guns off the streets. And so it's a bit bleak, honestly.
Bill, let's just jump back to the aftermath of that great change in American politics, where you say the evangelicals began to be worried about their safety, began to talk about arming. In the early days, was the pushback then? Were there preachers saying, you know, for God's sake, do not resort to violence? Or was it just from the start kind of accepted?
No, there's a very strong history of nonviolence and pacifism and an embrace of those in the evangelical church up until, you know, the 70s and 80s when again, everything kind of tilted hard to the right. And with that, evangelicals kind of almost recreated Jesus in their image, you know, into a sort of Rambo Jesus, a kind of Marlboro Man, macho Jesus. And we see this expressed today, even in the way that they live out their quote-unquote Christianity, where empathy is seen as toxic because we have to be strong and tough and deal with migrants in our country, this kind of thing. So, you know, it's really been a sea change in the way that that Jesus is represented among white evangelicals. And it was only a few years ago that was just not a commonplace situation, that many churches in their constitutions and bylaws explicitly said, we are pacifist, we embrace nonviolence and so forth.
Were the wars the United States were conducting in those years, and again now, part of this? Was Vietnam part of this?
Vietnam was definitely part of it. And with that, you know, again, came a shift in thinking, more an embrace of law and order and the quote unquote law and order Christian became sort of the default, where, you know, the government was sending troops and we needed to support the troops and we needed to support the government because they knew what they were doing. And that was a gesture of patriotism. And all of that. So, you know, there was a shift away. And yes, it very much happened during Vietnam, at a time, of course, when much of the rest of the country was out in the streets protesting and So, you know, you can see that there, white evangelicals started to pull away from the mainstream and kind of, again, circle the wagons a bit.
And allowed themselves to be enlisted in the causes of politics directly. Did they? Was it because they had begun to sort of revel in their power, to enjoy the political impact they could have?
Well, you know, I mean, up until, again, you know, the late 60s and early 70s, white evangelicals were not a voice in the public square. They kind of kept to themselves. They weren't particularly political. And when they found their voice, they found it with a fury. This was a time when we had these televangelists coming into popularity. I'm thinking about people like Jerry Falwell and his Moral Majority movement. Yep. And yeah, you know, I remember also here in where I grew up in New England, which is, you know, sort of a blue progressive part of the country, we had bumper stickers that said the moral majority is neither, which, you know, it's not, but you know, so we weren't all on board with this, these trends. But yes, I mean, Ronald Reagan and this sort of big push towards conservatism and all of that. And his co-opting of religious symbolism and imagery into his own presidency really, really got people fired up. And, you know, there was a time when being a Christian was being a Democrat and you know, being sort of a Jimmy Carter kind of an evangelical, feeding the poor and building houses and doing all of that. And now, now they're solidly in Trump's corner.
So they may have to train their guns on Democrats when the worst comes to the worst.
Well, you know, it's a horrible thing to even contemplate, isn't it? You know, but I mean, when folks are being asked, do you feel like you're ready to use your weapon in order to defend your values, your Christian values, and they say yes, that's really cause for concern. And I find that is an existential threat, honestly, at a time when people are really feeling like they are being targeted by the deep state, and there's a literal battle between good and evil, between angels and demons. I mean, this stuff gets really dark, and it's very present in society right now.
It gives new meaning to that familiar response to massacre in America, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as I write in the book, thoughts and prayers are the road to hell is paved with these good intentions. If you really give a damn, you do something. And, you know, we have more mass shootings in the United States than we have days of the year. The Gun Violence Archive defines a mass shooting here as a shooting in which at least four people are wounded, if not killed, not counting the gunman himself or herself, although it's almost always a male. And by that measure, yeah, this past year we had more than 400 mass shootings.
And when you look at the persistent failure of the United States politics to do anything about reining in guns, maybe, Bill, maybe you're Christian enough to hope that prayer might do something. Maybe we should all be praying.
I think we need to do more than pray. I think we need to actually a few things. I honestly think we need to try and reason with our evangelical neighbors and friends. And I do think that some of them are persuadable on the gun question. I think some are on the bandwagon and they've bought guns because everyone else is buying guns, but they've done so uneasily. And I myself have had some interesting conversations where I just ask people, what is it you're really afraid of? You know, and listen thoughtfully. But, you know, we need, something has to happen. We can't continue to live and die like this.
Bill, are you still a Christian?
I am deconstructing my faith. By that, I mean, I no longer certainly can identify in good conscience as an evangelical. I am one of the so-called ex-evangelicals. Faith is still important to me, but I am deconstructing and trying to figure out what it is I believe. I'll be brutally honest with you. Embedding myself in this world of guns and Christian nationalists really was soul-sapping, and it left me pretty cold. With apologies to the band REM, that's me in the corner losing my religion.
Bill, thanks for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thanks for having me, David.
I've been talking to William J. Cole, journalist, author of A Reasoned Appeal to America, In Guns We Trust, The Unholy Trinity of White Evangelicals, Politics and Firearms. It's published by Broadleaf Books. This is Late Night Live.